Good. So we've been discussing the question of the relationship between the Bala Bias and the Poel. We saw there, we conceptually speaking, or a priori, we said there are two ways to understand the relationship. One derives from a subset of just contracts. So there's an agreement between the Poel and the Bala Bias, a service agreement. One agrees to provide the service, and in exchange, the Bala Bias offers compensation. The other way of conceptualizing it is as a subset of what? Of Evet. Good. Meaning it's a kind of a bilus, kind of ownership. The Gemara Bava Metzia and Daf Yud told us that Yad Poel is Kiyad Bala Bias, and what did that suggest for us? That what's the nature of the relationship?
Also
kind of a kinyan. And the Ritva's formulation that it's a kanye kniya alimsa leaned in the direction of a kinyan aguf. Right? Okay, good. Yakir, just mute your screen while, unless you're talking up.
All right.
But welcome, Yakir. Yeah. So Hakanye Kniya Alimsa, right? He acquired his. Sounds like he acquired the Poel, right?
Right.
Good. So just that language suggested that we're dealing with a real kind of a kinyan aguf. That's right. It's like a real bona fide acquisition. Right. That's what the Ritva suggested. The paradigm, obviously, so the Ritva himself points to the sugya in Kiddushin about an Evet Kanani, right? How an Evet Kanani is so much considered to be the property of his owner, ad kedei kach, that he cannot acquire things from him for himself. Whatever he acquires automatically passes to his master. And we'll see other Rishonim who appeal to the paradigm of an Evet Ivri of Gufo Kanoi. And last Chavur, we spent some time trying to tease out what is the Gufo Kanoi of an Evet Ivri. We saw a few different formulations. We may have to go deeper into this, especially the question of whether there's a distinction between the Kinyan Isser and the Kinyan Mamon. But be that as it may, it's clear from the Gemara and Kedushin Tes Zayin that an Evet Ivri is Gufo Kanoi, as you can see over here. The Nafkamina in the Gemara is that he needs a Shtar Shichur to go free. So the Rav can't just be mochel the debt, can't be mochel the obligation. And we saw the Ramban and the Ran argue that this kinyan is what's responsible for the heter to a shifcha knanis, a kinyan iser as well in the Ramban. And in the Ran, as Yoni guided us to the correct reading, that this is also what gives the master the power to compel the Eved to have relations with the shifcha knanis. And why the Adon has ownership over the children of that relationship, right? Because the Adon has like ownership rights over the Evet Ivri, as the Ran says, Ein zeh shibud be'alma. It's not just a mere obligation. Elakinyan aguf mamish, right? So that explains why the master can give the Evet bal korcho to shivcha kananis. That explains why he has title over the children. And in the Gemara's application, it also explains why he needs to get Shichur to go free. Good? That's just a background. Now, following the Ritva and making this extension of a Kinyan Aguf to Poel, we saw the Sheet of Marami Rutenberg in Simen Ayin Zayin. What did the Maram argue? Yair?
That a teacher who's hired can't be released from the obligation to teach with the Chilal.
Correct. So if you hire a poel, like a teacher, a mechila is insufficient. And why is it insufficient?
Because like an ivory for mechila is also insufficient.
Yeah. Or to put it more precisely, because even a poel is gufo kanoi. Right? How do we know a poel is gufo kanoi? Because a poel effectively is the same thing as an Evet Ivri. That seems to be the underlying argument of the Marami Rutenberg.
He never says that a poel is gufo kanoi, but...
Well, he says.
He says that is gufo kanoi, and a poel is like an Evet Ivri.
So isn't that like a chain argument? Right, it's like modus ponens, right? So, you know, an Evet Ivri is gufo kanoi, a poel is an Evet Ivri, like he says, midaminan poel le Evet Ivri, and so poel also is gufo kanoi.
It could be that a poel is like an Evet Ivri only in as much as mechila is work and not in as much as gufo.
Okay, it's like I think that would be trying to dilute the analogy that the Marami Rutenberg is drawing. Except that once you dilute that, once you dilute it that way, it's not clear why his argument is valid, right? Because if the analogy is not airtight, if it's not a strict analogy between Evid Ivri and Poel,
we know it's not a strict analogy.
Well,
we know it's not a strict analogy.
So I'm not sure that we know it's not a strict analogy yet. So let's hold off on that.
Okay.
But I think Maram's clear, right? He's running with this idea of a Poel's Gufo Konoi. Let me point out. So in this tshuva, he just says Midaminan Poel Evid Ivri. We saw the Machne Ephraim, who quotes this other tshuva, where of Marami Rotenberg, where he allegedly says that a poel is gufo kanoi, right? This is the Machne Ephraim in Schiras Aleph. That's why Amira alone is not sufficient to relinquish him. And then he says, dechol mine poelim l'abed ivri damru l'chol mili. Right? So, Yair, you would agree that this formulation is stronger.
Yeah.
Here he explicitly says, a poel gufo kanoi. And moreover, that kol mine poalim le'avid ivri damu l'chol mili, which is a stronger formulation of the analogy. So last time we didn't have the tshuva of the Maram. I added it to the source sheet now, the second tshuva. So we're going to come to it later, but it's over here actually on page 7 of the most recent version that I emailed out. So it's the Shut Maram Prague Simon Pei Hei. Let's see if we can find the... Well, here he says, Kol poel shehiskir atzmo lizman dino ke eved ivri l'chol mili. Citing our Gemara in Bava Metzia. You see that? See that formulation? Is that identical to how the Machane Ephraim cited him? Yeah, that's a good, right? So this is it's like a slip that the Machane Ephraim accidentally put in a Gufo Konoi. But I guess he thinks, like I think, that it's just inferred from the substance of the position. But although I think Yair is right that it's noteworthy that in this other tshuva of Maram, he doesn't explicitly say Poel Gufo Konoi. But I think the substance of his position commits him to that. All right, so coming back to the Machane Ephraim, he said, B'tshuvas Maram, Poel Gufo Konoi, dechol mine poelim l'avid ivri dam l'chol mili. Unless there's another shuva of the Maram where he says it explicitly, I think that's where he's getting it from. Okay. So the Maram is clearly, at least on my reading, an advocate of Gufo Konoi. On Yair's weaker reading, he's an advocate of a position that draws a strong analogy between Evid Ivri and Poel. Okay, we saw the Rambam in Mechira Yud Gimel Tesvav. What was the substance of the Rambam's position? That's right. There's no ona when it comes to Schiras Poelim because we know there's avadim are an exception to ona. And when you hire a poel, it's as if you acquire him for a certain amount of time, like an eved, and that's why he's excluded from ona, because avadim are excluded as well. So it's clear that a poel for the Rambam is a subset of avadim. Right? Everybody agree with that reading? Yoni, take issue with the reading, or... If Neshehu Kikone Oso Lizman, again, you might say the Kafadimion there is significant. V'avadim ein v'hem ona. So, whenever you take the Kafadimion, the Rambam is committed to the position that a Poel is sufficiently like Eved to fall within the Eved exclusion. Ben, you have a note on that? Or?
I agree. Obviously, like Kikone can go a different way, but there's no reason to think it would have been.
A real Kenya.
Yes, I mean, it's just like otherwise.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds a bit different than like Thurman or Van, with their languages. But yeah, Avadim wouldn't have come out because it's not a method.
Oh, right? Well.
Like their objection is on other criteria.
Okay, let's look at those roots. I was going to hold those for later, but let's take a quick look at the Ritvan Ramban and that Sugya. So they're also engaging this Ona question. And so it's the Bav Metzia Nunvavim base. So you can see it's here on page 7 of the source sheet. So the Gemara on Nvav, did anybody get a chance to look at that Gemara? The Gemara says a suffix. Gemara wants to know, is there Ona for Schiros? The Rishonim try to figure out schiras of what? There's schiras karkos, there's schiras batim, there's schiras metaltalin. So the first thing the Ramban says is that the Gemara is only asking about schiras behema and kalim. What about schiras poalim? What does the Ramban say? So, Ben, why don't you read it for us?
For the top of the line.
Well, the highlighted part. The lav mem karhu. So what's the position? What's the Ramban's position? He agrees with the Rambam's outcome that there's ein ona for schiras polim. Same reason, different reason.
Almost opposite reason.
The exact opposite reason. So what is the reason?
That
it's not a sale. Yeah, ona is an issue for sales, right? So a sale can't have its price inflated, can't price gouge in a purchase. But polim contracts are not, they're not sales, they're not mechira. See that? So Yoni, what was the point that you were trying to make with this? Because I think
that the Rambam does.
That's right. That's Yair's point. They're polar opposites.
Yeah.
Right? The Ramban here is saying, for the Rambam, the paradigm is, well, what's a poel rav relationship? It's a kind of mechira. He sold himself into a kind of servitude. It's a master-servant relationship. For this Ramban, he's explicitly saying that property right is not the way to conceptualize a poel balabayas relationship. Because it's lav memkarhu, right? It's not a sale. Right? So I think if you read the Ramban this way, it's clear the Ramban is staking out the opposite position, that maybe poel balabayas relationship is a subset of an agreement, just a contract, rather than a subset of haknah / property rights. Notice the Ritva makes a similar point. I should just note, in the Ramban, it's not clear if he's taking the position, right? Because how does the Ramban qualify it?
Yishomrim.
It's not clear if he's endorsing the position. The Ritva seems to endorse it and go further to argue that if you're dealing with Schiras Poalim, Pshita de'in bo'na, de'memkar amrachmana v'hacha leka mechira klal. So you see it's leka mechira klal, Pshita, the modality of the Ritva's position is much stronger, right? Schiras Polim is just, it's a category mistake to think of it in terms of Mechira. It's interesting because this is the same Ritva we have on Daf Yud Aleph, who talks about Kanye Kniya Alimsa, Kinyan Gamur. So the question is, well, how do those two points cohere with each other? Anybody have thoughts off the bat? I mean, this is a question we'll tackle downstream, but do you have thoughts on this right now? How you reconcile the Kanye Kniya Limsa Kinyan Gamarhu with this idea that it's Pshita, that this is Leka Mechira? Gabriel Akir, feel free to jump in if you have thoughts on this. Say. Yeah, Eitan.
Could it be that you mentioned for the Ritva that the Paul has the ability to back out? And so, therefore, he doesn't feel like it's mechira.
He's saying the mere zchus chazara is sufficient to negate the mechira aspect.
Yeah.
It's very interesting because Ritter himself wanted to say that that doesn't undermine the kinyan aspect.
Correct, but he does mention
it's a kniya limsa with a tam achriti that you could be chozer. Okay. So, very, very. It'd have to be a very nuanced distinction, to, right?
I mean, not every kinyan implies mechira.
Ah,
a kinyan kedushin, for example.
And a matana is a hakna without being a mechira.
Right.
So if that's the point, then the substance of the Ritva's position will actually turn on the compensation structure, right? Because what distinguishes a mere hakna from a mechira is usually the compensation, right? So I give you a house, you pay me the worth of the house. So maybe the Ritva and the Ramban would agree that we're dealing with a hakna. So it is a kind of a transfer of entitlement, not a pure contract. But the way you're compensated for it, what you get in exchange, is structured differently than a mechira relationship. Is that what you're suggesting, Yair?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm putting some flesh on the... on the idea that you're presenting. So the question is, do you want to try to make more sense of that now, or should we hold off? I mean, any of you want to throw something out here to explain exactly why the compensation structure would be different? Yoni, maybe you have thoughts?
I'm not totally sure I get the difference
in Hakna versus Hakna. So, Hakna is just a transfer of property, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I gift you my computer, that's yours. Right, so there's clearly no enough for a matana, right? But if I sell it to you and the purchase price is not fair, then there can be enough. So when we initially read this Ritva and the Ramban, we said, well, this is the exact opposite of the transfer of property view, right? That you sell yourself to the balabayas, because they're not conceptualizing a poel as a kind of mechira. So then Yair points out, well, maybe it's not mechira, but it's hakna. And then I'm saying, well, if it's hakna slash not mechira, that's going to already tell us something interesting about how a poel is compensated for his labor. It's not that he sells his labor up front, right? But it's he deserves compensation on some basis other than the agreement between the parties.
And then you get compensation for the work itself.
Something like that. Exactly. That's the direction that I think this might point us to. So I think that an Eved would be a clear-cut Mechira.
It is.
I would think so.
Even for like name
one. Yeah, and we'll get to this even. Mocherat, right? Mocheratzma. Right? And then that's why you need Xeris HaKosov to say that Avodim are Memuad from Karkos, right? And Hukshel Karkos and therefore excluded. Which suggests that it's a real mechira, which is the Rambam's direction. But this suggests that Schira's poem. So Yair correctly is saying, if the Ritva is going to be l'shitasa, we got to distinguish between, because he says it's a kanye kinyan limsa and a kinyan gomer. He says it on Daf Yud.
Right.
So then we have to say it's a kinyan, but not a mechira. And then I'm saying, well, that suggests that maybe the compensation of us of a Poel is what distinguishes it from the Eved's Mechira. So maybe we'll talk about something like Einol Eschiros El Vasof, or he's compensated like as he generates value, so that's what entitles him to compensation. Right. Not the upfront agreement.
The Kinyan process might be different.
Yeah, so
and
we'll see.
Chazara, therefore, might be a lot easier. If it was like a Mechira, I'd say it was a Mechira to a
you wouldn't be able to back out. Which touches on Eitan's point.
But saying if you can back out very easily, maybe if you add the contract itself, it won't be
good
per amount of work you mentioned.
Yes, 100%. And we'll see this in the breach cases, right? How much does he get in cases of breach?
Right.
Even when the balabai is breached, does he have to pay out the whole contract or just per labor that he received?
Right.
So that's hugely relevant to this discussion, right? Now, part of this discussion is, so again, I'm bracketing this as, this is not our Iker focus right now, because our Iker focus is Gufo Kanoi or not. But part of this bracketed discussion is whether Haschalas Melacha by itself should constitute a valid Kinyan Poelim. Right? We'll see that even if there's no like formal agreement, when they start doing labor, that's where you could entitle them to compensation. So again, that points in this direction that it's not the Mechiras Atzma relationship. Oh, there's a Kenyan, he sold himself, whatever. It's like the generation of value and labor is what entitles him to some sort of compensation. So that's related to this issue of Ona, or at least in our attempt to solve the Ritva's position. In the Ramban, we're not forced to say anything that extreme. Right, Yair? In the Ramban, because we don't have the Ramban.
I agree.
Correct. So in the Ramban, you might just say that it's an agreement. Right? Maybe the Ramban holds there's no Kenyan. On the Gufav, there's no kinyan on the Gufav Poel. Right? Because the Ramban, we have the Ramban on Daf and Vav, unconstrained by any other comment of the Ramban. So, bear this in mind. Okay, comments on this before we move on to the... big picture is that a clear nafkamina of Gufo Kanoi is this question of Ona. For the Rambam, it's because he's like he's selling himself that there's no Ona, because he's like an Eved. And for the Ramban and the Ritva, it's some other reason. Right? Because the nature of the relationship is not a Mechira one. Sorry, Yoni.
Oh, like the Magna Mishnah explicitly said the Rambam holds that it is Mechira.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the Rambam suggests, right? Correct. I mean, that's what the substance of his position. And that's why he needs the Eved exclusion to explain why there's no enough.
He also writes it in Novus Mechira. He also writes it in Novus Mechira.
Yeah, it could just be that because that's where he's dealing with Dine Ona.
Okay.
So. Okay. Ben, you have a comment? It sounds good? Yeah.
Cool sound, yeah.
You got complimented on your shoes. And...
I
got
a return favor.
Yeah. Okay. Here is another sheet in the Rishonim that seems to suggest that the Poel has Gufo Kanoi. Sorry, guys. So look here at the Rush on the bottom of page 4. So Klal Samad Chesim and Yud. Who wants to tell me about it? What's the big question in the background here? No, this has been here. Mikad Madina. What, the Rush? The two Rushes? They've always been here.
They're like printed versions. So yeah.
They've always been here. Geyer, tell us about the Rush. Good Rushes.
So the question the Rush seems to be addressing is whether...
It's a good Dickens question, right?
I heard Dickens.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So now everyone gets excited, you know? He's throwing a little literature, and it's like, oh, so exciting. I don't have to read David Copperfield anymore. Because it's about debtor's prison, basically, right? Meaning, but, so
debtor's
yeah.
Slavery.
Okay,
right?
Good.
I have a shachot, and it indicates that someone owes me money, and I could take that person and sell them as an eved, and that's the lashon he uses in this tshuva.
Okay, good. So we have two tshuvas of the Rush.
Right.
The question is, what remedies does a creditor have against a debtor who has no assets to make good on the debt? Correct? And the creditor wants to know, he asks the Rush, can we compel this guy to work for me? Or to sell him to somebody else to pay off the debt? That's the question before the Rush. Okay, notice in the first tshuva, Klal Samad Ches Simen Yud. So just let's read the language of the tshuva. Yoni, you want to read for me quickly?
Sure.
Chachmei Bergov. Yeah, we're gone. Yeah, that's the critical question, right? Does a Yehudi have the power to be tofes gufo shel chaveiro to pay off the debt? Right? Notice, by the way, if we're talking about Hofeld, powers versus rights and duties. Notice how the Rush uses this phrase koach, right? Like bekoach oso shtar, right? Does that shtar give him the power to sell this guy into servitude? It's an interesting point.
Does the right be a servant to the creditor, or can the creditor do with what he chooses?
So we nobody said anything about servitude, right? The question is just can
working on.
Can be tofes gufo, sorry, but koach oso shtarcho. Right? Does he have rights against the person himself? So what is the answer?
There are borrowers who need a little bit more gufo, so we stop it going French.
So what's the answer?
Yeah.
Alright, so the creditor can't be tofes gufo shalova. Now be yishtabe bo, I take that to mean that he can't compel the debtor to work for him, or Yim Karenu B'Shvilchov, we can't sell him to a third party to pay off the debt, right? That's the Rush's position. Now, did anybody mention anything about Avdus here?
Other than me, no.
Well, other than you, right. So in the Rush, there's no talk about him being an Eved Ivri.
I mean, the Drusha is in the Kabbalah, which refers to an Eved Ivri.
Excellent. So, but the Rush in his answer moves directly to a discussion of mechiras eved ivri. When is it permissible to sell somebody into being an eved ivri? So what does he cite? So Yoni continued to Davka. Yeah, and that's the Gemara in Kedushin Daf Yud Chesam et Aleph that I added over here. Because so it's only if he like performs a crime of Geneva that justifies selling him into Avdus, but we're not going to sell him for a Chov. And I think this is really borrowed from Rabbeinu Tam. The Gemara doesn't say Velo Bechovo. It's like Rabbeinu Tam's extension of the Limud to say they can only be sold for Geneva, but not for lesser obligations like not paying off a debt. Okay? And the rush adds for good measure. So go on, Yoni. Yeah. Even if this was an agreement between the parties, right? So he said, if I default on payment, you can sell me for my labor. Okay, the im shibed gufo. Yeah, super interesting, right?
Otherwise
you get right, because no din eved ivri.
Like a weird...
But who's talking about eved ivri here, right? I thought you just wanted to know, like, can you compel me into doing labor for somebody else to make good on the debt?
Clearly they're connected.
Okay, so one way of reading this rush.
Would you mind just following up to the question again?
Yeah.
But this wouldn't be a koach.
Well, but koach also star.
Right.
It's the Hofeldian power, not physical power. Remember that was Hofeld's point. Got to distinguish between a legal right and just the non-legal ability.
He's still not like a.
But yeah, you're right. Litzvos gufo is pretty strong, but then.
But he's also not like a koach. He wouldn't be compensated for it, not paid for it, just.
So you're saying this is like he's dealing with like something that de facto is avdus. Is that your point?
Yeah, I don't think it bears any weight on
the thing of Kolach. Meaning just the mitzias here is a relationship of servitude. So let's sort of be super precise. Suppose you owe me money and you have no assets to pay. And I say, great, Yoni. You're good education, you're articulate, you're tam chacham. So, you do my job in the shul instead of me. You know, I'll collect a paycheck, but you get up there and talk in my place. And that we'll consider that a payment of debt. So you think the rush is okay with that? Because that's not avdus, right? I'm not forcing you to... I don't know what would constitute avdus on his picture.
You
know, but
he's not bound to the...
So long as it's pu'ula, so long as I'm using you as a po'o, that would be permissible on his view.
But I'm not a po'o. You're forcing me...
He's bound to this, yeah.
You're saying by definition, the moment is...
Yeah, because what's the alternative? If he doesn't...
Well, the idea is that we're compelling you, the Bezin is going to compel you to work to pay off the debt.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's avdus.
You think that's avdus? Well, just...
Is there a sense you saying, hey, Yoni, I own you, go make you my drush.
If
right, no shifcha k'nanis.
Okay, so I mean, there's certain afkamina, like the fact that they're not that good in certain senses. Like, nobody said, Paul, can I have the shifcha
k'nanis today? Well, it's an interesting question, right? Remember the Maharam said he's ke evit evi l'chol mili.
Oh, you think that means he good for shifcha k'nanis?
I think it's an interesting question, right? So.
But when you compare the formulation of the two sides of the same coin, like when you compare this formulation to the next rush, on one hand you see that he's consistent and he applies it to both areas. On the other hand, it seems really clear that the formulation here isn't a formulation of pula.
Ah, so you think you're with Yoni that this is avdus.
Litzvos gufo, though. I don't know.
So you're saying it's avdus just in virtue of the fact that it's like it's coerced labor?
Or I don't know if it's referring to any particular kind of labor. It might actually be referring to
taking his body.
Yeah, and like now you're.
But why is that?
Like
but he's saying the courts are barred from being mocher bigneva, being mochro, right? Being mochro bechovo.
Meaning I can't take Yoni and lock him in my house and make him give shiurim for me.
Because that's a kind of like avdus or something.
Right, and we're just.
It's an unjustified assertion of power over somebody else's person.
Right, and there are nafkaminas, as we listed before. Maybe mechila is a nafkamina, maybe ona is a nafkamina.
Right.
There are other nafkaminas to what the Rosh Hashanah talking about.
Right. Interesting. So my view, I think, you know, I'm not so wedded to this reading, is that even to require him without force to work to pay off the debt would violate the rule of a nimkar b'gnei vaso v'lo b'chovo. Because the Rosh doesn't see a substantive distinction between avdas and pula. Ben, with us? So that's my reading of the Rosh. I see both of you are saying, no. The Rosh is limited to avdus, but you have a chiddush that being tofe somebody's guf is already a kind of avdus, / requiring somebody to work is a kind of avdus. Right? Isn't that that's your view, Yair and Yoni? That's your...
Yeah, I think in context, you think the next one. You think it's implied also to Koala?
Yeah, correct. I think even if we could all agree that the kinds of service that you would be doing are just poel services, poel labor.
Yeah.
We'd be barred from requiring you to do that because of nimkar b'gnei vaso v'lo b'chovo. Pula itself is a kind of avdus.
How do you explain how you can't be poel? I mean, question.
We'll get to that. Good. Obviously, the more you think that a poel is a kind of avdus, you're going to get into this problem. Well, how do you? If that's prohibited, why is it permissible? We'll get to that.
You're on that problem before we hear.
Yes.
You're explicitly saying you can't be sold, but yet you can choose to be told.
Correct.
And here the Rosh even says explicitly that you can't do it yourself, but only because, like, every day breaks down to everyone on the side.
Correct. Let's see, Yakir, what do you think? You have thoughts on this Rosh? Gabe, you have thoughts on the Rosh? What's that, Yakir?
Nothing further than what was already discussed.
Whose side are you on? Are you on the my reading side, or are you on the Yai or Yoni side?
I think I'm more on your side.
Yes. Okay, so now at least it's an even playing field. Okay. Even though Yakir starts with a Y, so you might think that he'd be with Yoni and Yair. Mm. But he sees the truth where it is. So it's on my side. Okay, good. Ben, you have strong thoughts on this? No? Okay. Good. So let's look at Gabe. Did you want to weigh in, or you're content?
I'm content.
Who's not content out in the Midwest?
I think a
lot of
words.
Sure. Yeah, he's in Cleveland. Yeah. Okay, so let's look at the second Chuvos of the Rosh. Klal Ayin Ches Simen Beis. Here I added a little more to round out the picture. So the substance of the Chuvos is the same, but I added the question. It's such a great question. This is like such a classic Shiloh. So again, it's about collection of debts. And here we get a little window into the Rosh's world. So we don't know if this is in Spain or this is still in Germany. But here's the question. So Reuven borrowed money from Shimon. There's a milva bishtar. V'shibed lo kol nechasav shekana v'she'asid liknos. Metalti agav karka, etc. So he did say, whatever I own now, whatever I'm going to buy, that's all meshuba to pay off this debt. Then here's the move. Right? Classic halachic trick. Okay? So look at this move. V'yachar kach nasan kol nechasav b'matana la'acher mikrovav. Should be probably la'achem mikrovav. V'lo hiniach la'atzmo lo karka v'lo metaltlin ela kol nasan lo. What a move, right? So I borrow $1 million from Yoni, and I say all my assets are meshubah to pay back, but then I transfer all the assets out of my name into my cousin's name, and I have nothing left to pay Yoni. That's right. Now, what? I guess it depends, like, exactly when he transferred the assets.
Right.
So I guess over here, he must have done the transfer before he did the shibud. Now, here's the best part, right? So usually you'll say, well, look, he said any nechasim that he acquires are meshubah to the chov as well, right? So he's always incentivized to make money. But what happened is, v'hu dar b'veis krovo, mean, he's living now in this in the house that he transferred to his cousin. That's a living large. Ochel imo al shulchan echad, ochel v'shoseh berevach, v'lovesh begadim noyim, and the kicker is the ishto gamkin loveshes begadim noyim. The whole family is living large. And look at this, v'nosenes matanos lekrovoseha, right? They're like cutting out checks.
Like all those Jewish stereotypes were legit.
Yeah, this goes way back. And now when the creditor wants to come and collect, he says, Omer shakol nosin lahem, krova mishalo, v'im lo nishal lahem afilu puta achas. Like, this is not my money. I have nothing. I've garnished. I'm just noshing from my cousin's estate, you know? And here's also, v'hu yoshe batel, if he was doing labor and making his own money, that's meshubit to the chov. But he's content sitting at home doing nothing. Right? So the creditor is like, look, I'm entitled to collect here. What's my remedy? Now there's an interesting wrinkle to this question also, and you can see the shoel here seems to be a bit of a lamdin. That's right. Although he seems to be a bit of a lamdin also, because he transferred all those assets kedas u'chedin, right? So he knew what he was doing.
Getting to the questioner is the guy who's getting screwed over.
I don't know. I mean, did he have like the rub of his community write the shiloh for him? So yeah, I don't know. Obviously the questioner wants to know whether he could compel this guy to start working. Right, so no longer be Yoshe Batel, so that he could start paying back the chov. It's not an unreasonable question. So, getting back to Yoni's case, so suppose Yoni was making money every day as a rabbi, and suddenly the day he starts to owe me money, he stops working. So I want the Bezdin to like order Yoni to start working again to pay off the chov. Right, so he's like, oh, is that obvious really? We just want him to do what he was doing until now. That's what Eitan, you just made that point, or that was Yair's point earlier? That was Yair's point. So maybe the transfer must have happened before. So maybe if they're metaltalin aren't meshubah to a chov, but if it's karkos, then they would be meshubah. So if it's karkos, then presumably the transfer happened before the havla.
What was the havla?
I mean, so he transfers all his assets out of his name, and you know the other guy didn't know, and he's like, oh, all my nechasim are meshugah. Something like that. Right. Yeah. Whatever I have, nothing.
Yeah.
Right? They didn't actually inspect the, you know, who owns what.
I think the keys are different.
So one second, let's get. Now notice that the plaintiff asks, look, there was a hischaivos bishtar, and the shtar said, shechayev li atzmo, umamono chiv gamor. So the language of the document was that he and his property are meshubit to the debt. Okay. And then also the shtar had all these clauses that said the maldek can be gove kifi yecholto bein min hadin bein shelo min hadin, which is very interesting. We're talking about like these like extreme remedies. So the shtar itself provided for the malve to collect shalom and adin, if necessary. It's kind of interesting, right?
Right. One of the
Mishnah
says, to collect shalom and adin,
it
becomes an adin.
Right. What would otherwise be an adin, right? And so he says,
l'fichach,
im amarti lo bo va'aseh imi b'chovcha, hadin imi, v'chayev hu la'asos imi. So for all these reasons, if I say, just start working again, I'm entitled to compel him to start working. Doesn't sound unreasonable, right? He's not saying you got to start working, you know, cleaning pots in a kitchen. He's just saying start earning income.
Well, how do you justify distinguishing between different kinds of work?
Well,
on what basis?
Yeah, I hear the argument.
Yeah,
right.
My dream job is to be an artist, so I'll start working.
Right. Right.
You know?
Or my dream job is like read newspapers and not doing
anything. Right. What a job.
That's right. That was an interesting question. Could you like tax people for who don't like? Why is income taxed? Right? Why shouldn't you just tax people if you're a member, like a head tax, right? If you're a member of society, you got to contribute. Why is your contribution only proportional to income? Right. So there should be an automatic like Like, why should the guy who doesn't want to work, why should he get to benefit by not contributing it? He benefits from the roads and everything. It's like, why shouldn't he have to also chip in to pay for the schools?
Well, the
roads, he sends his kids to public school. He sends his kids to public school, right? So if he doesn't want to work, he's not going to pay any taxes.
It's a classic, the creative and there's a whole thing.
Yeah. Well, I think they paid. Right, right. Similar thing.
Well, what is it? If you're getting something with someone else's help, income tax is a tax really on the structures that allowed you to make that income in the first place.
We don't want to get deep into taxes, but the point is that the rush is saying, I'm just asking this guy to work to make money to pay off the debt, right? Now notice the Shoel actually raises this issue of Kili B'nai Yisrael Avadim, which is quite extraordinary. He says, "V'masha Amru Chazal Kili B'nai Yisrael Avadim Lo Avadim Lo Avadim Hani Mili B'Shvil Sheyachal Lomer LaBal Abayis Harei Me'oz Chabiyadcha." See, he's saying that applies in a case. Take a look at this phrase. What do you think he's saying? Anyway, you might say there's an issue of libanei shalavadim v'lavadim l'avadim. It's a presumption in the Torah against servitude. And he says that doesn't apply in this case. Why?
I like that idea.
It's a nice distinction, right?
Right. Once you're already paid, then you're done.
Yes, that's right.
Before you're paid,
that's exactly
given
right.
That I'll pay you once you.
That's exactly right. Meaning you're not required to be a servant. I can't compel you to be a servant to be paid. Right? So if you want to back out before you're compensated, that's perfectly fine. But in a case where you already took my money, you are meshubah to me. So he thinks the whole principle of Kili B'nei Yisrael Avadim is not applicable to compelling somebody to work to pay off a debt that they already owe. It's a nice alumnus for distinction.
It also has a cute language of like a low-level shmala.
Yeah, right, yeah. You
that's
really are.
That's where you have cute language all that right?
That's the problem, right? That's what
right.
We want to protect.
The more you're an Ebed, the more problematic it would be.
Well, yeah, right. So you see, exactly, that's very important. So we're actually going to look deeper at this question later on. But notice the Shoel is not looking at it that way.
Same,
right?
Same thing, like,
that's right. When you really owe this stuff, then justice requires that. That's right. That's exactly right. Right, because some people, well, you know, and you could say like an Eved Ivri. An Eved Ivri actually is an Eved.
Right.
Right? So the more you owe, the more bound you are to go through with the agreement. Okay. That's the Shoel.
Shoel's really fun.
That's what I'm saying. He's right. He's a sharp Shoel.
That's good.
Yeah. As well, there's longer stuff in the Shiloh, so we take a look. On your own time, take a closer look at it. Ben, you're going to miss the answer. You're going to miss the... But if you stay, then you have to stay till the end. Because it's stay for the answer, at least. So here's the Rush's answer. Unless you really have to go. If you really have to go, then...
Stay the answer.
Okay.
I won't be able to go if I don't know the answer.
That's right. You seem pretty fine. So Shiloh is like just a kind of like the Shoel and the Rush, kind of forced servitude, right? Not let somebody go. Shavit Gufo. Okay, so here the Rush says here's his answer. Who wants to tell us what he answers? Who wants to tell us the answer? Anybody? So the first thing he says, tell us.
Structurally, it's a similar answer. He quotes similar sources to his previous answer. He can't.
What's his ruling? So factually, what's the ruling?
The conclusion is he cannot compel him to work.
Cannot compel him to work, right?
And the logic is, he quotes the additional element of not being able to claim money from even a chef beat that you can't, invade.
Walk in.
A certain amount of your.
Which is super interesting, by the way. Very interesting. Argument, because you might say that's like actually limited to like taking something from someone's property, and the Rush builds this kal v'chomer saying, look, if Torah doesn't let you trespass to collect the debt, it's not going to let you have rights against his body, which is a nice argument. Then he cites Rabbeinu Tam, who holds v'nimkar b'gnei vaso v'lo b'chovo. Right? Okay, but that's about avdos, not about mir pula. Right? So what does he answer? And here I think the Rush is addressing that issue head on. Right? The source of Rabbeinu Tam that says you can't be sold for a chov is about being sold into avdos. How does that bear on being sold into a pula? And I say, go work at Goldman Sachs for 2 years. And then you'll pay off the debt. So what's his answer, Yair?
Well, Sapphire and Emet are interchangeable.
That's right. So I think here he's explicit that Sachir and Eved are just the same concept. All right, so firstly he says, Maskir Atmo is Nikra Mechira. He cites Bav Metzia Nun Vav. That's exactly where the Ritva and the Ram disputed that contention, by the way. That, and Nun Vav is the question where the Gemara says, Yesho Na, for Schiros. And notice he thinks that Mechira would apply to Pu'ula, Maskir Atmo. And moreover, he says that an Eved Ivri himself is called a kind of a Sachir. The upshot of the Rush's discussion is that selling yourself into being a poel is the same halachic issue as selling yourself into being an eved. And that's why v'nimkar b'chovo, v'nimkar b'gnevas of lo b'chovo, same thing for...
being sold. It doesn't weigh in on whether or not... It's obvious that it's
being sold by a third party.
Right, I assume it's obvious that a person can choose to work in order to earn money to pay off a debt. That seems...
Well, we'll see, yeah. Well, that's some of the stuff Makoro's downstream. Well, if you think it's really kind of Eved and it's also to sell yourself into Avdus, you should also be also to sell yourself into Pulus. Right, we'll talk about that. Right? Okay, Ben, you can go now.
What?
You can go if you have... Right. But don't go for too long. Does everybody see that? Yeah, Yoni, you see the Rush?
Yeah.
Zolt? Well?
Pretty extreme.
It's pretty extreme. That's an interesting question. What's the relationship between these two tshuvos of the Rush, right? Are they getting at the same point or are they different points? So my reading is that they're both tshuvos are consistent because they both assume this analog between Poel and Eved, assuming that Poel is a kind of gufo kanoi, etc., etc.
I feel like at least when we explain the case where Yoni would have to work for you, and
yes,
this case is different just because one of them is that we know he has no access. The other one we know he has access, they're just hiding in a separate bank account.
I think the Rush is like, he's not getting into like the fraud issue. Like the Rush is not addressing like, oh, they're his just like in somebody else's rishos. He's acknowledging that, oh, they're not really his. So he's okay with like the straw man transfer, it sounds like. Right? Or at least... Well?
This is like a two-month, like, permitting.
Yeah, well, I should check. There may be other aspects of the tshuva where he addresses the Ramos issue. It doesn't bear on our Poel Balabais relationship question.
Because, yeah, you got the end.
Right, there's no head there. Right.
You
go scot free. Yeah. But I wonder if there's like a part where he like just says, like, oh, we have to like see if the assets are genuinely transferred, but I am looking for that in the tshuva.
Do you think he wrote this in Sfarad or in
Europe? I don't know. Where were Jews doing these kinds of things?
Well,
it sounds more like a Sfarad tshuva, no?
Yeah.
You know, the Gvir is sitting there in his estate, and it doesn't sound like, you know, a bunch of Yidden fleeing the Crusades. And
yeah,
Germany.
I don't think that, the European tshuva this time really focused on
that's right.
Assets. I think they're focused on surviving.
Maybe. Who knows? Now, there's one wrinkle to this tshuva. So what do you make of the exception? What? The ksuva, yeah. The ksuva exception here. What do you make of the ksuva exception? This is an important machlokas rishonim. If a husband owes money to his wife or ksuva, so if he doesn't have any income, is he exempt from that obligation? Or can the bezdin compel him to work to pay off his obligation to his wife? So,
meaning the obligation is during marriage, right?
The chiyah mizonos, the chiyah mizonos of the ksuva. Right, chayav adam, so Rabbi Eliyahu thought, chayav adam lahaskir atzmo lefarnes ishto, and Rabbeinu Tam disagreed. Now, there's some question here whether that's unique to ksuva, chiyah mizonos, or whether that's generalizable to all chovos, right? The Russians obviously could argue that it's
generalizable. Oh, sorry, it's limited.
Unique to Ksuva, otherwise it would contradict his ruling, right? So he says, "V'efshash Rabbeinu Elyo hayamoda b'shar ba'al chov she'ein mechayvin osa lishtabed v'lefroa ela davka b'mizonos ishto misefer ksuvasa nilmad ksuva na'afalach v'oker v'afarnes." So maybe it's like a special chi of ksuva that justifies selling him to pay off the debt. But I don't know.
But it's more than just, it's not that you like made the tanaik.
Right, because remember in our case also.
He also made that tanaik.
That's right.
It's like,
100%. It's a din in ksuva that we're allowed to. So this is like a nice ksuva.
Right.
It's a nice ksuva part.
Right.
Right, but I'm still, I kind of hear the Rabbeinu Tam view that even in ksuva you shouldn't be allowed to do this if you think that selling him as a poel is a kind of selling him a davis. Right.
Like, to go back, he just said that there's like a certain like marital obligations that like supersede standards. Like you should
it's like Vinimkar Bignevo.
Right.
Right. Well, I mean, so Vinimkar is like
big.
That's right. So he's like, maybe the Chiev is stronger.
What happens if
your wife makes more money than you?
So, you know, I in Englewood, I gave this, I spoke to Oscar just about the rights and duties in the cover piece. I basically presented the cover piece. And literally 15 people come over and ask me, like, because about rights and duties. And I'm like, well, you know, in a Jewish marriage, there are only duties, no rights. Like, all these, like, middle-aged people.
I love that. I'm like, I'm going to stop getting all the comments.
Yeah, I
go, like, you should get out before you can.
Yeah, it's horrible. Okay, now let me just call to wrap up this way of thinking. Let's just, I want to point to two formulations in the Marit, where he runs with this idea of poel gufo kanoi. So actually, this may be very good for Yair, because Yair was saying maybe the Maram didn't explicitly commit to gufo kanoi formulation. So the Marit in Kiddushin Yadalid talks about evidere gufo kanoi, and that's why he says evidere is different. Because if his guf wasn't nikneh, how would he be mutar b'shivcha knanis? Similar to the Ramban. And then the Marit adds, v'li nira afilu eved hanimkar la'akum v'hanikneh mehem kul hu kinyan haguf miknu. Here's the crucial point. V'afilu schir yom and schir chodesh. So it sounds like even just a poel, right? Shibuda is gabayhu v'lo miknu atman bidvarim. Okay, what's the raya? May evid ivri alfinan. V'i machli al girono en girono machol. V'ein ze dome lechov. Seze shibed gufo limalacha. Note the formulation, right? He thinks that a poel is like an evid ivri. Because it's not just a debt, right? It's not just a chov, it's not just an obligation, but there's a shibud haguf for work. So it sounds like it's something stronger than just a chov. What he calls a shibud haguf. Okay? Now it's funny because other Rishonim distinguish between a poel or a worker who has a mere shibud versus somebody who has a kinyan haguf. So it's interesting, where do you draw the... What's the critical distinction? For the Marit, the distinction is between ein ze dome lechov because there's a shibud haguf. Right? Notice that. We'll see Tosfos in Kiddushin draws the distinction elsewhere. He talks about a distinction between a shibud versus a kinyan haguf. Okay? So we want to... Part of our job here is to nail down these terms and figure out which way are the Rishonim using these concepts. It's our Hofeldian inspiration. Now, the Marit elsewhere has an even stronger formulation. And here, this is like the Machan Ephraim's quote from the Marami Rittenberg. So Yair, take it away. The Marit in Yeridan and Aleph, the Poel.
Right, the Poel, Gufo, Kanoi,
that's a very strong formulation, Gufo, Kanoi, which the Machan Ephraim had citing the Maram. Okay. And therefore, look what he says.
That
the Gufo Meshubad.
Yeah, so not only is Gufo Meshubad, but he thinks Gufo Meshubad blocks the right of a poel to be chozer.
Even though there's no specific performance.
Well?
Even though there's no requirement.
Oh, so maybe there is actually. Hold off on that. Hold off on that thought. But remember in the beginning, everyone was asking in the Shchut Maram, why is the Maram so worried about whether the Mechila is binding without a Kenyan? A poel could always be chozer. Right? So let's grant that the Baal HaBayis' Mechila needs a Kenyan or a Shtar Shukur or whatnot. But a poel has a right to be chozer b'emtza melacha. So I think the answer is this idea of the Marit, and the Maram is implicitly adopting it, that if there's a hefsid, it's a davar ha'aved, the poel does not have as chus chazara. It doesn't apply. Do you see that? And the Marit here is telling us that's because gufo kanoi. So it's even stronger than the Ritva. The Ritva said it's gufo kanoi so long as he's not chozer. Maritz arguing that it's gufo kanoi and therefore his chus chazara is limited to only those cases where the Baal HaBayis won't suffer a loss at the hand of his chazara. Do you see that? Ben, do you see that? Yeah?
Why does the loss make a difference? Why would then...
Because the Baal HaBayis owns him, he does the poel doesn't have the chus to...
Why does he have this chus?
When there's no... So then you'll say, oh, it's like a special, you know what this is like a little bit? It's like the Shoel in the Rush. You know, Kili B'nei Yisrael Avodim doesn't exist when there's like a bona fide obligation. It's like when he owes money. And you might say a similar idea here, right? It's not going to, Kili B'nei Yisrael Avodim is not going to apply when it comes at the monetary expense of the Baal HaBayis. Right? Right, I think it's a good connection between the Shit HaRush Shoel and this point, right? You guys see that? Anybody see the relationship between that two? Is there any comment here? Any thoughts on this? But you see what he's doing? He's actually restricting the right of the poel to be chozer because the poel is considered to be kinyan, to be gufo kanoi to the Baal HaBayis. Okay? Thoughts on this, guys? Yakir or Gabe, you guys have aros on this? A little chiddush here of the Rush and this chiddush Marit. We can get to it yet. Yakir and Gabe, anything? Yakir, Gabe?
No.
You can hear us, but no haros. Gabe?
No haros. Like
no haros, okay. It's pretty important. Yeah? Yoni, thoughts? What do you mean, no thoughts?
Kol Marit?
Okay. Yair? Thoughts on it?
Might be my first Kol Marit.
What?
Might be my first
Kol Marit. Okay. I want to make an observation here. A la Hofeld.
And I guess it would just also, go back to the book of Marmot Metzia, when you mentioned the time achrina, like, the more
achrina it is,
the scope of the chazara, the more achrina we could really get away with it.
So for the Marit, it's like super achrina.
Right.
Right? That's right. Now, inspired by Hofeld, I want to point out there's like a ambiguity here exactly in what the Marit is saying. So what do you... So, Hechad Yikab Seda Eino Yachal Lachzerbo. What does that mean? So he can't... The word can't, right?
Well, it seems like the lack...
Yeah. Tell us, Ben.
Would be the where or since in some ways, right? Where there's an F-state, he can't be closed there. As opposed to since he doesn't have an F-state, one seems causal, one doesn't.
Okay, but I think those would be very related, right? So the causal reason will dictate the scope of its application.
Sure, but meaning like causal in the sense of that's what allows him to not be voted over.
The fact that there's no pseudo.
Right.
It's a harmless breach, right? So,
right.
Good, that's going to be important for our breach question, right? When, why, how? I want to know about the ambiguity of Enu Yachalachzar, the ambiguity in terms of the Hofeldian incidents. Eitan, it seems like you wanted to weigh in.
I was just pointing to the fact that the word Enu Yachal is an interesting, those are interesting words to use when we're talking about being able to, meaning are we talking about the right, are we talking about the ability, or are we talking about
good
all those things?
Right, so this is a great point where the phrase is not clear.
Exactly.
Enu Yachal, right?
Why is it not clear? I mean,
so it wouldn't be a liability, it would be a disability.
No power is liability.
So, a power, if I have a power, that means against you, you have a liability towards me.
Okay, he has no power.
Right, he has no power is a disability.
But you have no immunity.
Exactly, so it's correlative of an immunity.
Okay.
Right? So what's he saying here? So
I mean,
well, one way is to say that it's Enu Yachal, meaning no right. He has no right to be Chozer, meaning he's under a duty. Right? Meaning the Baal Bais has a claim right against him that he not leave, which means that he has a duty to not leave. Maybe he could be liable in breach or in damages for leaving. That's different from saying that Enu Yachal Lachzor, that he has no power to be Chozer. Right? He has a disability.
You're saying Torah would rather be force you to.
That's right. Nafkamina's specific performance. That you made that comment earlier, right?
Right. Yeah.
And that's exactly the Nafkamina. What's his position? You might say that the remedy here is specific performance. He's not allowed, he has no power to exit. Right?
What was the other option?
Just that he has a duty not to exit. Well,
big difference,
right? Well, the difference is whether you'd compel him to finish the job if he wants to be closed there versus allowing him to be closed there and just obligating him in the Zikin for damages.
But how is it different from any case where we would think that you... That, I'm sorry. One second. Even where a poa has the right to be chozer bo, we still will cost him, you know, the price of hiring new workers, for example, or other things like that. How is that different from Enu Yachal conceived of as a duty?
If it's just Enu Yachal, then it's a very weak... It's a very weak principle, is that your point? And it's chayav just with davar
avi. What's more adding to what we already know is that if a poa is chozer bo, then he may be held responsible for the hiring of new workers, or sochar leano
matan.
Yeah. Isn't that exactly
yeah,
the same
good.
Thing?
So there's much less of a chiddush here.
It's an unchiddush, isn't that anything?
Well, except that he relates it to gufo kanoi. Right? Meaning
I mean, there's no chiddush in it.
Correct. There's no chiddush in din if he's just saying that the poel has a duty not to be chozer. The chiddush is just conceptual that stems from gufo kanoi.
I guess it also implies.
But if he's saying Enu Yachal Lachzor bo, then he's making a much stronger point. But if he's saying, if he's saying he has no power to be chozer, then he's making a much stronger point, which is conceptually significant for like how strong the kinyan is. Right, because
right.
Gufo Kano, he's not allowed to be Chozer.
Right.
Right? Now, just conceptually contrast this with the Rush's point. The Rush's point is saying that we can't l'chatchila sell the guy because to sell him into being a Poel is like imposing Avdus on him. right? So there's a very strong presumption against l'chatchila imposing this kind of pu'ula onto him. This is kind of the opposite case, where he's already in that kind of a situation. He's already gufo kanoi, and the question then is, what's the presumption against letting him get out of it? Right? See that?
So. Right, and it could be that Mari agrees with the rush and pull out. He's
about?
And then,
yes, correct, correct, correct.
And then we'll still keep him over
again. You already are, 100%. That's what I'm getting at. Okay, so Adkan, we've seen, so you see there's this really strong view out there that a poel is gufo kanoi, and therefore he's really on the cusp of being an eved, or he's identical to being an eved, and these are the dinim that stem from it. Before we move on to see the other camp, I want to just throw out a ha'ara. It came to me this morning, so I didn't even put the marmokomos on here, but I put the comment on the sheet, which is just that if you think gufo kanoi, and he's analogous to an eved ivri, and we know that an eved ivri has a kinyan iser, assuming like the Ramban, that there's a kinyan iser and an eved ivri, I wonder if, in a weaker sense, there's an analogous kinyan iser on a poel. Maybe if you ran with the Marit and the Machane Ephraim, you'll say, oh yeah, so a real poel is muter b'shifcha kananis, because he's an eved ivri. But let's say we don't go to that extreme. Can we point to other dinim that may indicate that the avdus, the quasi-avdus, the pu'ula, changes the halachic status or the halachic obligations of the eved? It's like the mamonis kinyan affects something in Isurim. So I think it's very hard to show this. Like, what dinim would you look to? I just want to point out that there's a Gemara in Brachos. I'll add it to the source sheet. You know, it talks about how a poel, you know, should skip the last Brachos of Birch Samazon because he's on his employer's clock. You know what I'm talking about this? Does this sound familiar to you?
Yeah.
Right? And then, like, the later post can talk about, oh, yeah, like, a poel should skip out of Shacharis early to make it to work because he's on his employer's clock. Things like that. So look, you could say
with the guy working in the tree.
Yeah, right. So these are brachos sugyas, correct? So look, one view is just that these dinim are not so important, and you know when they conflict with your duties to your employer, so that just becomes more of a reason to not assert or to recognize the insignificance of these orachaim halachos. I wonder if another way of looking at it is to say that. No, like a poel, if you hold gufo kanoi, has this kind of quasi kinyan iser, and that tampers with the halachic obligations that he has. So then we'd look into all these Arachayim cases and say, I don't know, this is not because these dinim are you know, insignificant in the face of duties to the employer. It's because like an eved's Arachayim status is changed in virtue of the kinyan iser of his employment. That's a suggestion that I'm making.
What's interesting is that the more you start saying his status, probably like other people are changed because of the poem.
That's right.
The more you start veering into he has become an event to someone else.
Yeah. So, in the background, when we get to this question, what exactly is the basis for avada himlo avadim lo avadim, and what rights does that generate? Then we'll put this question to the test.
Right. I'm saying like the fact that the more you think that there is like a change.
That's going to
be
the
real question of not being.
Right, I agree.
It's just the Mamanos question of, oh, he's an Eved, he just can't leave, like the Ma'arit version. So that
Okay, but that explains why the Gemara is so makwe that he shevas chazara. Right, because. Because the Gemara is makna schus chazar, because the dine polim infringe on his status and
right,
his halachic obligations. Yeah, correct. Correct. Right, like if you read that Broid and Wiener piece, I think, right, they're making the point that, oh, he's got to have a right to exit so that he could do mitzvos. right? Something like in those terms, which I think would actually work nicely with this idea.
Right.
Right. It's like, you know, the Avid Ivri. You got it. He's got to go free because he's Mutter to Shifakhtanis. Can't stay like that, you know? Okay. Any comments on this? Yakir, comments? Gabe, comments? How do we get these guys to be more active? What are they, sleeping out there in Connecticut and Cleveland? All right. Guys, you know, whenever you have a comment, jump in, okay?
We will.
Okay, good. Now, let me just get the other side out there. So until now, we've seen all these views that are adamant that Gufo Kanui. But let's see the other view. Should we get this out now, guys? Should we save this for... We have 10 minutes now. Should we get it started now or just hold it off for Thursday?
Do you think we could get a significant, valuable amount out of it?
We could at least get the sheets on the table. It's up to you guys. Would you rather just hold it off for a Thursday? Do some
really
now.
I have a sure lunch that I have to attend at some point.
Yeah, we're definitely done by 12:30. That's not the question. Should we just?
So,
yeah.
What?
Okay. Well, let's get the sheetas. Let's get the sheetas on the table then, and we'll end in 9 minutes. The Gemara in Kedushin on Yedzayin of an Aleph has this din. Anybody see this discussion in Tosos Kedushin Yedzayin? Yeah, you must have seen it. Yeah, so what's the discussion in Kiddush Nidzayim? What's the din for an Eved Ivri?
Well, it says an Eved Ivri...
Who sold for 6 years.
Assuming a 6 year sale, was sick for half of that time, the Alpha is still, you know, finished by the end of those 6 years, even if he actually wasn't working for 3 of those years.
That's right. It's a classic case, right?
Half,
you know, the guy's an Eved, he's supposed to work for 6 years, and, you know, he becomes disabled 3 years into the Alpha. Surprise, surprise. So the question is, who bears the loss? Does the Eved have to make up the lost time to his employer? Or does the Baal HaBayis have to absorb the loss? Pretty reasonable question. The Gemara holds. What does the Gemara hold?
Depends how long he was.
So if it was 3 years,
then the owner bears the loss.
Okay? Now, you know, the different reasons you could give for this. Let's just say right now that maybe it's because generally owners bear losses to their property. Right? If my car gets destroyed, it's my loss to bear. And so if my Eved gets sick, it's my loss to absorb. Okay? You have to figure out exactly then, you know, what if he's only chola for 2 years, but let's take the easy case of 3 years. Tosos quotes, the Yesh Shehayi Rotzim Lomar. Whenever you see that phrase, right? It's like the bad guy, you know? Yeah, it's like, right.
It's like, right.
That's right. It's like, you know, Reb Schechter's tshuvas. You know? Oh, they're the people out there who wanna. Right?
Rabbis.
Yesh Shehayi Lahatir.
Rabbis. Riverdale Rabbis.
So here's the Yesh Shehayi Rotzim Lomar. What do they argue? That on the basis of this Gemara about Eved, What can we conclude? That the same halacha applies to a poel. I hire a melamed, or I hire a worker for 6 years. He gets disabled 3 years into the contract. The Baal HaBayis has to bear the loss. By kimo Eved Ivri, Tosa says. Right? So the worker doesn't have to make up the lost time. Lo yu mashlimin asmanam, like Eved Ivri. And v'yitlu kol aschirus, and they collect the whole contract. The proof being Eved Ivri. Now, the Yesh Shehayi Rotzim Lomar over here, surprise, surprise, is none other than the Merami Rotenberg. L'shitaso. Because he is convinced that a poel is like an Eved Ivri and Gufo Kanui. Right? Hanir be'enai, says Merami Rotenberg in Simen Pehe, Hamalamed shechala yikach scharo mishalim. Kaimalan kedushin yudzayin, Eved Ivri shechala, etc., etc. V'chol poel shehisker atma lizman, dino ker Eved Ivri, l'chol mili. Right? That's Maram's argument. Eved Ivri, Gufo Kanoi, Poel Gufo Kanoi. So if we know that an Eved Ivri still gets to collect the second half of his contract when he's sick, so Poel also should get to collect. Sound argument under those assumptions. Valid argument under those assumptions. Tosos has a raya that he thinks refutes this conclusion. And he says, well, what's the difference, right? How can, why is the proof from Eved Ivri no good? So Tosos thinks he could prove, based off Gemara and Bava Metzia, which we'll get to, that the poel is only entitled to be paid for the labor that he performed, in contrast to an Eved Ivri. So he only collects for the years of his service. And he says, you can't compare the poel to the Eved Ivri. Why? Ben, you want to read it for us? Starting from the highlighted section. The highlights. That's right. You can't compare a poel to an Eved Ivri because an Eved Ivri is Gufo Kanoi.
Right.
Go on. Right.
Interesting phrasing.
Yes. Interesting phrasing. Notice also it seems to bear on this question about how exactly a poel is compensated.
Right.
So Malamed ain't gufo kanoi, right? That's the key phrase which the Maram disagrees with.
Right.
Okay, yeah, and? So what is it instead? Yeah. What did he do? He employed himself for like a certain duration of time. Right? It's not gufo kanoi. So it sounds like Tosos is moving away from this Kinyan property right idea. Right? So Sechiras Poelim is not a subset of Kinyan, master, servant, etc. It's not a transfer of title. It's like a more contractual, Sachar Atzmo L'Zman. He had an agreement with the employer that he would perform labor for a certain amount of time. But, you know, if he can perform it, then, you know, he should only get what he did. Right? It's not like, the Eved's your property got destroyed, it's your loss to bear. No. They had an agreement. The Eved would work for a certain number of years. The Poel would work for a certain number of years. And if he can't work, then, you know, so the agreement is terminated and you figure out some, like, equitable resolution. You see that? See, Tosus is moving away from this paradigm that we've seen until now, Gufo Kanoi. Zolt, do you have thoughts on this?
No, I think it's
very reasonable, right? Tosus? I mean, I'm not saying it's more reasonable than the Gufo Kanoi paradigm, but you see, they're really different ways of conceiving of this relationship. Yeah, here?
I mean, you know, well, maybe my intertextualist is showing, but...
Your what?
Gufo Kanoi side has a more of a Messiah. What does the Ingufo Kanoi side?
What's the evidence for...
Yeah.
He's saying it's intercontextual.
Ah, interesting. So you're saying this is the raya for Tosos, right? Sorry, you're saying there's a problem for Tosos. You're saying there's a problem for Tosos.
That our Gemara, the Ayin Hey, is the raya.
Mm-hmm. But what about this? Did the Gemara say... The Gemara wasn't explicit on
Bava Metzia. Right, you need a different reading of the Gemara Bava Metzia to avoid that conclusion.
Correct.
So when we were doing that Gemara, I tried pushing back against a little bit.
Right.
And you made a compelling case.
Right. Especially if you have an anti-Ritva interpretation of that Gemara, you'll say, Lamaskana, once you could be Choser, you see that it's not Gufo Kanoi.
Right, so I suggested something like that.
Right, so I think maybe Tosus would have to run with some theory like that.
Okay.
Let me just point out, consistent with this view, the Ramban and the Ritva that we've already seen, right, so they don't conceptualize, well, this is more powerful within the Ramban than the Ritva for the reasons we discussed earlier. The Ramban does not conceptualize Schiras Poelim as a kind of Mechira, right? Which may be consistent with this Tosos idea that it's not a Mechira at all because it ain't Gufo Kanoi. It's just Sachar Atzmo for a certain kind of labor. So maybe the Ramban's position on Ona is consistent with Tosos' position about Chala Shalosh. Again, building up the idea that ain't Gufo Kanoi. Let me just get these other shitas out very quickly, and we'll just stop here. This is one more shita. Rabbeinu Yerucham, and it's picked up in the Shulchan Aruch, and it's mentioned by the Shach, says explicitly, Does there been Yerucham in Nesiv Chavtas Chelek Dalid? Im Amar Lepol Al Asacher Bifnei Bezin Bifnei Shnayim Lech Pater Below Mechila Acheres. You don't need a Kenyan to be Meshacher your Poel. That's unique to Eved because Gufo Kanoi, the Sugin Kedushin Yud Zayin. But that's unique to Eved. Maram argued the same din applies to Poel, or Ben Yerucham disagrees. Amir alone is sufficient to...
You say this is sufficient.
That's right. Pater below Mechila Acheres, right? The Poel is discharged without requirement of further Mechilos. Like just Amira itself is sufficient. Yeah, we'll talk about it. We'll pick up with the Ritvaz on... But you see, now we have the fundamental tension on the table. Right? Gufo Kanoi, Lav Gufo Kanoi. One view seems to conceive it in property terms. The other view seems to lean more towards this contract idea, just an agreement. At the core of this machlokes, of course, is the actual nature of the Schiras Poelim. Part of what we have to determine is what's the relationship between a Poel and an Eved. Right? So the more you think Gufo Kanoi, the more you got to figure out how these things are related. And the more you think Lav Gufo Kanoi, the more you think they're going to be distant and they get different Tina. So we'll pick up with this discussion on Thursday, and we'll talk more about Gufo Kanoi, Lav Gufo Kanoi, and then we'll move into this relationship generally between Eved and Poel. Okay, so that's the plan for Thursday. Good? After that, I want to discuss the question of Yad Poel Kiyad Balabayis, which again is related. And then after that, Zichus Chazara. So, we're taking our time here because it's complex stuff and it's very important just to get nailed down precisely.
This is much faster.